Hello and welcome to The Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and today's vegetable garden doesn't have to be big to give you all the produce you like to eat. Gardening small is the way to go, says author Kate Copsey, especially if you lead a busy life and have limited space. In The Downsized Veggie Garden, she shows you how to create a small, easy-to-manage, edible garden almost anywhere, outdoors, indoors, in containers, on balcony railings and windowsills, even going vertical. And I have with me on the line Kate Copsey. She's a freelance garden writer, radio show host, and author of the book, The Downsized Veggie Garden, How to Garden Small, Wherever You Live, Whatever Your Space. Kate, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you are more than welcome. Yes, and it's beautiful over here in New Jersey. Yes.
And it's beautiful here in Logan, Utah. It's a little cloudy today, still spring weather, rain one day, sun the next, snow again. So it's that time of year, though, when we are thinking about what to plant. And so I'm curious, what prompted you to write this book? Because obviously you are a gardener extraordinaire. You've been gardening a long time. You know what you're doing. And so what prompted the book?
Well, one of our kids brought me the Square Foot Garden book. And as we were downsizing, we'd got four children, and I guess my husband wanted to downsize each time. And I'm not very good at doing that because I like gardening. And I guess I was in an apartment during relocation, and it started to make me think how people in those very small areas really did get on into gardening. So I proposed it to the editor, and he took me up on it. But the other thing that I found was that our eldest had just brought his first house with his wife, and it occurred to me that they were actually interested in doing small gardens as well. So it really goes to both ends of the spectrum. Those of us that are downsizing from kind of the acreage, and those just starting as well.
Sometimes you're forced into it, like you were when you moved into that apartment. But how do you know when it's time for you to downsize if you just stay in the same home?
Well, we did downsize just a little bit to this one in New Jersey, but yes, it's kind of a mental adjustment, I think, as well. But on the other hand, you know, when you've got a lot of acreage, it's a lot of hard work to do things in the ground. So, you know, when I went to the Square Foot Gardens and raised bed, it was just so much easier, I think, than, you know, digging up the back 40, which we did when we had a lot of acreage. So, yes, it was a lot simpler than I thought. So, yes, it was great fun. You know, you can sit on the side of the raised bed, and you can just pick out the weeds and then pick out the carrots. And, you know, it was much more pleasant than going down on your knees in something that's in the ground, because when we were in, I think it was Indiana, you know, we had a tractor and, you know, dug beds that way. And, you know, when you do it in the ground, it seems like it gets a lot more weeds to it.
Yes, so, doesn't it?
You know, yeah.
So is there anything that you've missed about downsizing?
Actually, right here, you know, it's been able to maybe grow quite as much. You know, when we had the kids, you know, we were feeding everybody from the garden. And I think as they go away, you know, I suddenly realized that the whole thing, you know, mowing the lawns and things like that, when you've got three flat acres, it's, you know, the teenagers disappear. And, you know, so that side of it was a lot easier as you downsize. But I think maybe it's the quantity that you get, and then you could have that little bit extra to can or freeze or something like that, which we never did when kids were with us. So, yes, it's a much smaller garden. So, you know, it's... I just enjoyed the smaller sizes when I actually got used to them. So
the positives way outweighed the any negatives.
Oh, I think so. Yes, because as I say, it takes a lot less time when you've got the raised beds, once you've got them started, apart from, you know, the original building of them. And actually, when we came to our current location, you know, the first thing I did was clear some land, put the raised beds in, and I ended up going to a wood merchant to get the boards for it. And, you know, actually building them was harder work than I thought. And actually I found, you know, when I guess 20 years ago, you know, you used to have kind of five yards of compost in the driveway. Mm-hmm. And then you just wheel it to the right place. And I'm finding now that that's a lot more hard work. It takes a lot longer than it used to. Well, 5 yards seems to take forever.
and you're talking as far as small as you can get, 16 square feet, that's 4x4. So you can do quite a small space.
Yes, yeah. Actually, my beds now are about 10 foot long, which was the most I could get into the car. But, you know, you have to make those adjustments. But one of the things I thought about the 4x4s, they're great for lettuce and things like that, and they're easy to cover. But the 10-foot ones I prefer for the what I call row crops, like the peas and the beans. You know, those never seem to be quite as successful for me in producing as much as I wanted to in just a 4x4. But lettuces and cabbages and tomatoes and things, those are great in the 4x4s. And then I just have this one bed that I use for what I would call, as I say, the row crops, and the carrots run down the side of it and the onions down the other side.
Well, now you have your book broken out into three sections, and the first one talks about finding space to grow vegetables wherever you live. So when you're in, say, an apartment where you've been before, what do you look for? How do you know you have enough light and space to be able to grow something?
I think basically, you know, if you see other people growing things on their decks and things like that, I think if you've got a general idea of, you know, where's north and south, you know, if you go in the afternoon, you will see the balcony will be bathed in sunlight. And that's the sort of thing that you want to look for. If you go in the afternoon and everywhere's nice and shady, which in the summer is nice, but that's not enough for tomatoes and peppers that you might want to grow. So look, go in the afternoon and you will see how much sunshine some of these apartments would get. And if the apartment balcony is on that side, you're in good shape.
So if you have a north-facing balcony, that's probably, I guess you could grow like impatiens or some flowers that like shade, but it would be kind of hard to grow vegetables.
Yes, I mean, some of the lettuces, particularly if you're in the south, some of the lettuces and mints and things like that, they will take afternoon shade if you need it. But I think things like tomatoes and peppers and beans and eggplants, all those kind of hot weather plants, they really do need to be bathed in sunshine all afternoon. If you just get kind of morning sun, some of the lettuces will do fine there, some of the kales, what I would call the early season ones. And mm-hmm. If you think of the early season, we don't get as much sunshine generally, and the angle of the sun is much shallower. So the actual heat getting onto the plants is much lower as well. So, you know, that comes into it. You know, so some of the lettuce will do quite well on the east side of a balcony or something like that. True north, where you don't get any sun, is going to be tricky. You're going to probably have to be inside and growing maybe hydroponically or something where you can add that extra light to it.
Well, I'm talking with Kate Copsey. She's author of The Downsized Veggie Garden, How to Garden Small Wherever You Live, Whatever Your Space. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. You can also send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So what are some of the places that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think where you could grow something. So we've talked about balconies in an apartment. So would you put like a whiskey barrel? That's kind of, you know, pretty good size to be able to grow something. What do you grow things in on an apartment balcony?
Well, actually, you know, that there are some new containers out that you can hang over the railings, which are very good. There are also some vertical systems that actually only take maybe 2 square foot on the ground, and then you have 5 pots going upright. The one that I like is called My Garden Post, and it's kind of a plastic post, and you have 5 different containers that can hang on that, and that you know, alleviates it, so you can actually sit down at the same time. I mean, one of the things when you get into containers, particularly in small spaces, if you get hooked on it, then there's no space for you to sit down and actually enjoy the space yourself, because it's all over with the plants. So anything that can go up is a positive with that space.
So you're looking for things like the peas, like, and I guess you wouldn't want to try to grow corn on a balcony, but...
Well, there is something called an earth box, which is kind of an elongated type box that's on wheels, I believe. And that you can grow maybe a little bit of the peas and the beans. And the advantage with that, again, because they're going upright, that can give you some much needed privacy on a balcony as well. So it's kind of, and that would work in subdivisions and you know, that type of place where, you know, you want just that little bit of privacy, maybe for your morning coffee or your evening cocktail, you know, where you've got the peas that give you the barrier, or the beans growing up. So sometimes, you know, a 2-foot or 4-foot balcony, you know, you could have that little bit of privacy on there, but anything that goes up relieves the space on the lateral ones. Things like squash, they have a tendency to run over the ground a little bit. So you know, rather than trip over those, you might want to stick to, say, anything that goes up is really good.
And I know in a lot of smaller yards, you don't have much in the back, but you do have some space in the front. And I think oftentimes people don't think, oh, I can't grow vegetables in my front yard, but actually that's a great location.
Oh, absolutely. But I think depending on where you are, I mean, those things called covenants might have problems with it. So you have to make it, I think, aesthetic as well as fundamentally edible. And, you know, things like blueberries are great to grow in the front. But also when you look at lettuce, I mean, you've got so many different shades and colors of lettuce. You've got green ones and light red ones and dark red ones, that you can actually use those as edging plants. Just as much as you can maybe the petunias. And then you've got okra. I mean, the flower on okra is absolutely fabulous, even if you don't like the fruit, you know.
Well, and you can even grow okra in Utah. I've grown okra in my garden here. The pods don't get as big as if you were growing them in the South, but they're sure great cut into the wagon wheel shape and rolled in cornmeal and fried. I like, they taste great.
Yes. And you know, they're a little bit like zucchini, in as much as they're underripe one day and overripe the next day.
Yes.
And they produce a lot of vegetable. So yes, I mean, when you do use them, you know, they are great, but the flower is just spectacular.
So I wanted to talk about windowsills, because especially in older homes, you tend to have a windowsill that you can grow things on. What sorts of plants do well in a window box?
Well, you mean one that's just on the windowsill, on the inside or outside?
Yes. How about both?
Yes, I mean, on the inside, again, so long as it gets sufficient light, but windowsills particularly, you know, so long as you've got maybe 4 or 5 inches deep on the container, one of those long containers, certainly lettuces and kales would do great. But some of the small tomatoes might also work quite well in that. Tiny Tom, for instance, doesn't get too big. You wouldn't want to put maybe, if it's only a 3 foot container that's maybe 4 inches wide and 6 inches deep, you probably would only want one tomato in there because the roots of the tomato naturally on a garden bed would go down. When you've got it in a restricted one, they're going to go across. So you're going to limit the amount of other things that you can put in there. But certainly small tomatoes, if you've got light, lettuce, kales, the chards would do fine in that. And a lot of herbs would do well as
basil.
Well. Parsley and basils and things, they will do fine too.
I love this idea also I've seen in your book about rooftop gardening. You don't usually think about growing on your roof. And a lot of Utah homes don't have flat roofs because of the snow load. But if you have a flat area, that might be an area to consider. You've got this one couple growing on top of the garage, their garden.
Well, yes. I mean, and the thing that you have to remember, obviously, if you're doing a rooftop, whether it be an apartment block or a garage or wherever, they weren't made to hold big containers. So you have to think about the structural side of it, just as anything else. And the example that I've got in the book, he was just across the front where the garage doors were, because that's the main frame of the garage. And so there you've got the structural strength where you can put some containers. It's not right in the middle of the garage roof. Where you don't, you basically got wallboard, and you can imagine if you put kind of a couple of big containers, it's going to start bowing, and you'll end up with the tomatoes on top of the car, which you don't want. So a little bit of common sense as to recognizing where the strength on the rooftop is the first step. The other thing you have to consider is how are you going to water it? Dragging a hose pipe up or goodness, a watering can up. It's a bit of an issue sometimes. You know, I've heard of people that drag the watering can up the stairs to the apartment roof, and then they water, and then they do that about six times. So that to me means, you know, you've got something wrong in your organization. But the water inside. But then the positives are you get lots of sunshine. You're not going to have deer and groundhog and chipmunks eating it. So, you know, there are some positives to it. And it can look very attractive. Add a few flowers draping over the side. And you've got an attractive garden that everybody actually comments about as well. And so, I think with anything that you do in the front yard that's unusual, like the vegetables, people will stop and ask you about it when they're walking the dog or walking little children to school or, you know, just enjoying the evening.
Well, and everyone, well, it seems like most everyone has a parking strip that would actually do quite well for growing vegetables in, if that's all the space that you have and you have permission from either the city or the covenants from your particular place that you live, that's plenty of space to be able to grow vegetables.
Yes, I think so long as it's about a foot wide, I mean, that really is all you need. And then, you know, you just kind of go down the side between your driveway and the next driveway, whether it be in attractive containers or whether it be actually dug in that little piece down the side. You could do either one.
So if you've decided to do raised beds, you obviously have to put more a growing medium in there. So you have in your book a percentage of what you need of different items to create that growing medium. Why don't you address that?
Well, actually, that was based on Mel Bartholomew, the square foot gardening guy, which is one-third peat moss, one-third vermiculite or perlite, and one-third compost. Now, in the original one, he uses several different sorts of compost to get a variety of nutrients. I tend to go bulk compost, so I just fill it up with that. But you use the peat moss kind of adds a little bit of volume to the general bed. And the vermiculite or perlite, I prefer perlite personally, and they're kind of little, like little tiny popcorn things, and mm-hmm. that aids with aeration that you need, which if you use garden soil, you know, particularly in the Midwest, you've got a lot of clay. You probably have to compete with the rocks and things in the garden as well. But in a lot of areas, I'm on sand right now, you know, you need that. The different soils tend to be a little more sticky. And, you know, that's why I think the raised beds make it a lot easier. I think one extension agent commented that there is no situation in the ground that cannot be corrected with a raised bed. So this mix I put in. But even if on my garden beds where I grow herbs and things, I still put a certain amount of peat moss in there as well as compost every year. Because I'm on sand, I don't need the vermiculite in the on the garden beds, but I still put in the peat moss and the compost. They're good for most areas.
Yes. I'm talking with Kate Copsey. She's author of The Downsized Veggie Garden. If you'd like to join our conversation, it's 1-800-826-1495. We have her for a few more minutes. 1-800-826-1495. Or you can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So with these created beds, how much fertilization do you need to do?
I think that compost generally is the best fertilization for any vegetables. And I certainly don't go for the chemical varieties. I like everything to be natural. When I'm putting things out, like peas, for instance, the first feeding, if you like, of that will be a compost tea, because that kind of just moistens the ground. I don't use any chemicals at all, because I think if you're growing vegetables, you like to know what's on them, and you know it would be contra to everything. You know, if you start putting chemicals on them, you might as well go buy the iceberg lettuce from the supermarket. Mm. What we want is to get the well-tasting lettuces and cabbages, and without them growing quite as fast as maybe the ones commercially. You know, so I think compost every spring is an essential part of the nutrient base. A little bit of maybe extra fertilizer for tomatoes, because they are heavy feeders. There are some organic tomato plant feeders. That would be fine to put on, or a general organic 10-10-10 or something like that, maybe just once in the season. If you're in containers, which are virtually a large raised bed type idea, and you're growing in containers, maybe every time that you change out, whether it be the tomatoes and cabbages, and you may be changing out to put maybe some tomatoes or peppers in, at that point I would take out the top maybe 4 or 5 inches of the container and refill that with some good compost and mix that in. So, you know, it's just really refreshing the top of the garden beds or the container just every time you turn it for another season.
We have our first caller, and it's Margaret in Vernal. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. This is a little bit off the subject, because I wanted to ask about cyclamens and how you get them to bloom again.
What was the flower?
A cyclamen or cyclamen.
Oh, okay. Cyclamen or cyclamen.
Yes, whichever you wish to call it.
Kate, do you feel like you could answer that question?
Well, the flowers, you know, like tomatoes and things, you know, they tend to go off, you know, they tend to, they flower fairly early in the season. Is that what the question was?
Well, she was wanting to know how to get the cyclamen to flower again.
I was given a cyclamen, and it had flowers on it, and the flowers have now died, and I was wondering what to do to get the next blooms, and when to expect them.
Most flowers in the veggie garden, you know, you can mix things like marigolds and things do well in gardens. And, you know, when the squash flowers start coming out, you know, they need lots of fertilizer. So anything to attract insects to the garden is good. The first pretty flowers that come out, I think, are the peas, which are early season, a little bit after chives put out their blossom. But I think if you put flowers in the vegetable garden, it's I think it does put in that those extra, it drags in the extra pollinators that you need.
Well, and Margaret, I'm thinking with your cyclamen, I know they don't like to be watered from the top down, and they prefer to have the water.
I've discovered that.
Yes. And so the one I have in my office, I just feed it about every third watering and water it from the bottom up, and it continues to go. Now, it does tend to like a little bit more light, so...
Yes, I've got it in a light place at the window, which gets the afternoon sun, basically, or late afternoon. But you feed it every quite often.
Yes.
With just a regular fertilizer.
Yes, I would.
Okay.
About every third time. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm talking with Kate Copsey. She's the author of The Downsized Veggie Garden. So, Kate, if you had four things to tell people about what they should do in their veggie garden that would really help things go along, what would those four things be?
The first one would be don't crowd things, because we expect a lot from our garden, but just putting too many things in and putting things too close, crowding them out, really isn't a good thing, because they'll all be compromised that way, and that's not a way to be successful. Another thing is to know where your sunlight is coming from. Even the first year that I was actually in this property, I put the tomatoes out and I put the peppers on the wrong side. So as the tomatoes grow tall, the peppers are growing a little bit, but they were on the shady side. So they don't do as well. So make sure that you've got the tall plants at the back and the shorter plants in the front, so that they all get sufficient sunlight. And I think another thing that's important is pick the right variety. Get things that are maybe virus resistant, and made, if you're going in containers, make sure that they are labeled small enough for containers. The industry has responded beautifully to small varieties. You know, don't grow a dinosaur kale, for instance. Go for maybe a dwarf Scotch kale. So use be aware of kind of the names of these things to give an idea how much space they're going to do. You'll be a lot more successful with the smaller varieties. Let me see, that was three. And the last thing would be maybe to make it fun. Everybody kills things sometimes. Don't get over it. But to be successful, just have some fun with it. Enjoy growing things. Pay attention to it. Enjoy it. Maybe go around every morning or every evening. That way, the basic IBM type of idea of you catch the problems early and figure out what they are. And that way, again, you'll be more successful if you pay attention to the plants. And enjoy eating them. You know, don't put things in that you don't like. Except maybe a few.
Try something new.
I grow kale because chard, but my husband doesn't like them. But I like looking at them.
Yes.
So, you know.
Especially if you have something like bright lights that has all that fluorescent coloring. It's just really pretty.
Oh, yes. The reds and the yellows and the vibrant colors. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful.
Well, Kate, thank you very much for joining me.
You are very welcome. Thank you very much, Brian. I appreciate it.
Kate Copsey is the author of The Downsized Veggie Garden, How to Garden Small Wherever You Live, Whatever Your Space. And we'll have this interview archived on the Zesty Garden webpage at utahpublicradio.org. Thanks again, Kate.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye.